Local News, Culture, and NPR.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government is here, as he is every Friday, with news from the legislature. Today is Valentine's Day, but this Monday may be a bigger deal for our local agricultural communities. It's Wayne County Ag Day. Celebrating local agriculture, we'll learn more about the highly anticipated event that's open to everyone, even if you're not a farmer. Tustin Social launches a free teen club program to empower local youth with culinary arts, mixed media, and creative writing. We'll learn more about this free after-school initiative. Plus, the Party Farm in Roscoe announces its third annual songwriting contest. We'll tell you how you can apply. That's coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Vice President Vance has spoken at the Munich Security Conference today. There's been a lot of attention on the U.S. since President Trump talked with Russian President Putin this week about Russia's war in Ukraine. Trump also spoke with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Vice President Vance is supposed to meet Zelensky today, but during his remarks, Vance chose to criticize Europeans over what he says are their efforts to squelch free speech.
Now, to many of us on the other side of the Atlantic, it looks more and more like old entrenched interests hiding behind ugly Soviet-era words like misinformation and disinformation, who simply don't like the idea that somebody with an alternative viewpoint might express a different opinion or, God forbid, vote a different way or, even worse, win an election.
Vance also urged Europe to stem illegal migration, and he demanded that NATO members spend more money on defense. Thousands of federal workers are being fired from agencies across the federal government. NPR's Jeff Brumfield reports on the employees let go at the Department of Energy.
Two officials at the Energy Department confirmed the firings to NPR. They spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak to the press. The firings are of so-called probationary employees who have worked for less than 2 years in the federal government. According to one of the sources, the employees are being fired without notice or severance. The Energy Department conducts a wide variety of activities, everything from funding renewables to carrying out fundamental science to maintaining the nation's nuclear weapons. A spokesperson did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Jeff Brumfield, NPR News, Washington.
A federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to lift its freeze on funding at the agency USAID. Administration officials say they shut down foreign aid because they're figuring out whether to wipe out programs entirely. Stocks opened mixed this morning as the Commerce Department reported a sharper-than-expected drop in retail sales last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 2 points in early trading.
U.S. consumers kept a tight grip on their wallets last month after a busy holiday shopping season. Retail spending fell by nearly a full percentage point in January, led by a 3% drop in auto sales. Cold winter weather may have kept some people from shopping, but Internet sales were also down. Spending at grocery stores rose slightly in January, but not enough to keep pace with the sharp monthly rise in grocery prices. Spending at restaurants and gas stations was also up during the month. Retail gas prices are inching higher, as typically happens this time of year. AAA clocks the average price of gas at just over $3.16 a gallon. That's about 8 cents higher than a month ago, but 9 cents lower than this time last year. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. The Vatican says Pope Francis is hospitalized in Rome. He's been giving ongoing treatment for bronchitis. He'll also undergo some medical tests. His events have been put off through Monday, at least. Pope Francis, who is 88, has previously had bronchitis. Hamas has named the three hostages it will release tomorrow as originally called for in the ceasefire agreement with Israel. The hostages include an American and a Russian who are dual citizens with Israeli citizenship. Their release will resolve a dispute with Israel that had threatened to derail the ceasefire. Here's a tale of biblical proportions. A man kayaking off the southern coast of Chile was briefly taken into the mouth of a humpback whale. NPR's Amy Held reports on the viral video.
The whale takes Adrian Simancas, kayak and all, into its mouth and dives back below the surface.
Tranquilo, agarra el bote, agarra.
Come, stay calm, his dad Del, who is recording, calls to his son as he pops up after a few seconds. Unlike Jonah, who the Bible says stayed in the belly of a great fish for 3 days and three nights. I thought I was dead, Simancas tells the Associated Press. I thought it had swallowed me. Happily, humpback whales have an esophagus too tiny for a man and no teeth. Instead, their baleen, bristly fibers act as a sieve to filter krill from the water. Simancas and his dad kayaked safely back to shore with an incredible tale. Experts say such encounters are rare but have happened. Simancas thinks the whale may have just been curious about him. Amy Held, NPR News.
This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Sony Pictures Classics with I'm Still Here, a film by Walter Salles starring Fernanda Torres. A woman is forced to reinvent herself after her family suffers an injustice by the Brazilian government. Now playing only in theaters.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. And joining us every Friday is Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, with news from Monticello. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. Happy Valentine's Day.
To you as well.
Wanted to ask you first off about something we've talked about before, this proposed landfill in Ulster County, which raised some concerns among the Sullivan County legislature because it was plan to possibly be on the border there.
Right on the border, yep.
And reading in the Shawangunk Journal that might be on hold. What can you tell us there?
Yeah, I saw the same article. We haven't gotten any kind of official notice on anything, but it seems that this has run into some political intrigue and the attendant snags in Ulster County. The Resource Recovery Agency and the legislature, at least some of the legislature, seem to be at odds over this. And I think the Resource Recovery Agency, from what I can tell, saw the writing on the wall and has said we're going to look for alternative waste processing such as anaerobic digestion, hydrolysis, biogasification, and other methods. And the journal's putting that forward as, for right now, any talk of landfill or further work with that in the town of Wawarsing in Ulster County, which borders our towns of Fallsburg and Neversink, is on hold.
And has Ulster County government or the resource agency reached out to the Sullivan County legislature at all about that?
Not that I'm aware of. I wouldn't necessarily expect it because it sounds like this was a rather heated meeting where this all arose from. So at some point or another, we might hear from them. I'm not saying that they're not going to talk to us. We hope they do. But at this point, if it's on hold, it's probably not terribly urgent for them to talk to us because nothing's going to move forward, which I would say based on what the legislature did in its resolution in opposing this, legislators are happy to hear about.
And Ulster still tackling its landfill trash issues, as is Sullivan County. Any developments there on Sullivan County end of, some of the proposals or plans that the legislature was considering?
Yeah, nothing at this point other than there is still that waste to energy being researched, that company called Reworld/Covanta. We are still in talks with them about that, but it's a ways out. And we are in the same boat as Ulster trying to figure out what are we going to do with our trash disposal so that users and taxpayers aren't hit with huge increases if and when our current location, Seneca Meadows upstate, the landfill upstate, closes.
Let's talk about some of the sales tax figures for the county. In 2024, you finally have some final numbers there that you compare against year over year. What are some of the trends you're seeing in the final sales tax figures?
This was rather interesting. We almost hit it exactly in what we budgeted for 2024. We came in with $80,214,337.65 in sales tax revenue. If you want me to repeat that, I can.
No, go ahead.
$80,214,337.65. That is an increase of 1.7 4 million or so from 2023, which was 78,667,525.44. I feel like a game show host here.
Board, and you can show.
And you won a brand new car.
So you guys must be pleased about those figures coming in.
Yes, taxpayers should be as well, because that continues to help us gain more revenue from sales tax and other methods than property taxes, which I don't know had ever been the case in our history until the past few years. But property tax revenues now are not the majority revenue that is used to sustain county government. Will it always stay that way? I would love to think so, but I don't know that it would. But for right now, it's very good news. We have budgeted for 2025, $80 million. So because we're thinking,
budgeting flat,
is this plateauing? We're not sure. It depends on a whole bunch of variables, almost all of which we have no control over. But what it seemed to be in the past was the top thing that was coming in. It's not tourism. A lot of people think tourism is the largest sales tax generator. No, it's the room tax generator. But for sales tax, actually, it was lumber sales. People were building and adding on to their homes, followed by automobile sales. Because no matter where you buy a car, if you register it here in Sullivan County, we get the sales tax.
Where does tourism fall in that?
Tourism, I think, is either number three or number four. Hmm. But it is – a lot of times we talk about that being the top industry. And actually, when you look at the numbers, it's not necessarily – I mean,
In terms of sales tax.
Employment, very likely, although healthcare ranks up there too, because we have the Center for Discovery, for example.
We talk about sometimes about tourism and ag as well as being top generators. Is ag still considered that?
Ag is in declining? The top 10, but it's declined a bit because the family-owned farms have disappeared. But we've also had younger farmers coming and doing more niche kind of farming, which is rather interesting. Driving down, I think it's Buckbrook Road in North Branch, certain times of the year, you get a very strong smell of hemp because there's a hemp farm there. And if you know what hemp smells like, you know what I'm talking about. And it's fascinating that we have that. So we honestly have, I think, a more diversified economy than we realize. We are not all dependent on any one industry, but of course, we're glad to have them all. I'm not talking down about tourism.
No, but it's good to hear that there's more diversification that folks might realize, or that sort of continued, not myth, but just that continued thinking that these are the two things. There's more diversification that's happened recently.
It's not just tourism and ag. We have a lot going on, and sometimes our job growth has been in the manufacturing sector as well, because we have some manufacturers in the area. So it's a really interesting mix that we have in Sullivan County, and honestly, as much as we have challenges to face, I continue to tell people we are the envy of other upstate counties, because we do have an economy that is pretty darn healthy.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some other tax topics. The STAR exemption. Remind folks what the STAR exemption is in New York State.
This is a property tax exemption that you get on your taxes, usually every year. Most people you've applied one and done. You don't even have to think about it anymore. However, some of you are going to be getting a letter in the mail this week if you haven't already, maybe next week. If you have the basic STAR property tax exemption and it's given to you in the form of a credit, not a check that's mailed to you as a reimbursement, but a form of a credit on your property taxes, they're going to ask you for further verification. The state has Office of Taxation and Finance has updated the rules and regulations with that. So they're going to require you to provide information like names and social security numbers for all owners of the property and their spouses, name of the school district where your primary residence is located, approximate date you purchased the property, most recent school tax bill, 2023 federal or state income tax returns for all owners and any owner's spouse who resides at the property. I can see it on your face. I can hear the sighs around the county.
Hold up. So, I know we have a STAR exemption, but I believe it's a credit. So,
okay. If you get a check that's mailed to you as a reimbursement, if you've paid and then they send you a check, you don't have anything to worry about.
I don't remember.
If you get a credit,
Right.
You're going to be getting this letter. And so, what we're recommending people do, our Office of Real Property Tax Services and your local assessor, don't call them, call the state, do it as a preemptive matter to find out, because the state can let you know whether or not you need to give them this information. I'm going to be putting out a press release later today about this, but there's a phone number. If you want to take it down now, I can give it to you.
We can do that, but we'll also put it on the website. And because I think that, well, at least in my case, I know that it's sort of one and done in my mind. I'm like, oh, okay, we did that.
Yep.
Now you're saying, the state is saying, and you're relaying the information, that there may be more that you need to do. And it sounds more complicated than I would think.
I'm sorry for the hassle, but yes, it's going to be.
Yeah.
We've already tried logging into the state system to do it, and it can be a little confusing. So we are encouraging people, be proactive about it. Give a call, 518-457-2036. That's 518-457-2036. And say that you heard the county talking about about Basic Star property tax exemption, that you may need to verify information and give them more information. Is that true for your property?
Right.
They probably will ask you what your section, block, and lot number is, your SBL number for your
property tax bill. Just paid.
So have that in front of you just to be able to give that to them.
Okay.
And again, if you don't get a check or you're not sure if you get a check or a credit, we recommend you preemptively
call them.
Do not call your assessor. Do not call the Office of Real Property Tax Services in the county. As much as we love to help you, we're not going to be able to help you on this level. It's something that only the state can confirm or deny for you. If you want, you could wait till you get that letter, but be aware that within 45 days of the date of the letter, you have to give them that information or your STAR exemption is no longer in force.
Any reason given why they're asking for this additional paperwork or information?
It's a good question, isn't it? There's a whole bunch of assumptions. I'm not going to get into all of that, but New York State has determined that they need to verify who is properly getting the STAR tax exemption. They want to make sure that their records are accurate and up to date.
We're talking to Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government about what's going on at the legislature and some news from the state there as well. Also, you wanted to let folks know about the progress that's being made on the opioid epidemic locally, some progress tracking over the last few years. That sounds like some good news.
Yes. Yeah, it's wonderful news, actually, because we've been working so hard on this. And for the team that works on this, this is such a morale booster. But it should be for people, too, who are as concerned as I am, for example, about the opioid epidemic. Over the previous 3 years, the average number of overdose calls per month to our 911 center was 38, 35, 27, going along the past 3 years. So you can see it's declining. But the average over just this past 12 months in 2024, because that was 21, 22, 23. In 2024, the average was just under 15 calls per month. So just a few years ago, we were at 38 calls every month. Now we're just under 15. Of course, we'd love to get that to zero. Mm-hmm. But it shows that what we're doing, what the community is doing, what everyone is doing to help fight this battle is working.
It's a good data point to look at and see how it seems as if that, at least that part of it, is going down.
Yes. Yes.
Let's talk about some other things that are going on in the county this weekend. Live music at the County Museum Sunday.
Yes, this is wonderful. We haven't had this, I think, for a couple of months, but now we're having it back this Sunday at 2 p.m., Sunday the 16th. We're going to have Annie and Mike Baglione. They are a bluegrass band, but they're also a folk music band. Annie plays guitar, bass, concertina, and accordion. I'm always amazed with people who can play multiple instruments. I play violin, and that's hard enough. She actually used to have a band, or no, she currently has a band called Breakneck Annie. I just love that name. And so they're a husband and wife team, and they are going to perform traditional folk songs like stuff from John Denver, John Prine, Jolene Welch. Also, of course, Carol and Aldo Triani, or Little Sparrow as they're known, are going to play with them. It'll be a fun afternoon of bagels, coffee, tea, and music at the County Museum on Main Street in Hurleyville.
Oh, I like all those words. Also, then the following Sunday is a triple header of experts talking about ancient and modern history at the museum.
Yeah. When I put the press release out on this, I had the fun of writing a headline saying, discover history you never knew was right in your backyard, because I didn't realize this either. We're going to have three people talking about things that you may not know anything about. The first one will be author Glenn Kreisberg, who has spent years studying Native American stone structures, and his research has led him to believe that scattered throughout the Catskills, including Sullivan County, are large numbers of standing rock structures that have mostly been ignored by conventional archaeologists. Often dismissed as colonial-era stone walls or field clearing piles, these formations are increasingly emerging as part of a Native American tradition of ritual building practices that reflect a sophisticated worldview. So it's something where some of those piles that you've seen out in the woods might have a longer history and a deeper meaning than you ever knew.
It's amazing.
Yeah. We also, of course, have Carol Triani, or Carol Smith. She's the director of the Frederick Cook Society. She's going to talk about Dr. Cook, who was a North Pole explorer and grew up in Hortonville, that he was an anthropologist, especially of indigenous cultures, Arctic indigenous cultures. And then finally, we're going to have Ryan, I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Mitro, a Sullivan County native and founder of a nonprofit called Sacred Circle of Stones. Mission is to steward local natural and cultural resources for future generations. And he will sort of echo, I think, what Glenn is going to be talking about with local stone monuments and structures that you may never have really taken much note of before. That will be Sunday the 23rd, again at 2 p.m., again at the County Museum in Hurleyville.
Some other things to make folks aware of. You're still looking for those charter review committee volunteers. Some folks, I noticed that when we posted that information, that announcement actually online, some folks were asking questions about how to do that. Uh-huh. So it seems there's interest, uh-huh. And remind folks what they can do and how they can get involved.
Yeah. The Charter Review Commission is required by the county's charter, which basically is sort of like the Constitution. It's guiding document to meet every 10 years to review that charter and determine if any kinds of changes might be warranted and to recommend those changes to the legislature for action. So we are in that 10-year mark now where it's time for the Charter Review Commission to meet again. And they're looking for people, legislators, willing and able to review the document, particularly anyone who might never have served on a county advisory committee before. So if you're like, well, I don't know anything about county government, we want you. That's what we're looking for. If you're 18 and over and all you know maybe is what you've been hearing me chitter-chatter about here on JFF, that's perfectly fine. That's wonderful. We'd love to have you there because you're going to spend some time with this committee meeting and talking to different people who understand about county government, and then you're going to get to put a recommendation forward to the legislature. It's not necessarily a huge commitment. Sometimes they meet monthly, sometimes they meet quarterly. It'll be worked out with the commission. But if you're interested, you need to send a letter of interest, just a short letter if you want, or an email to Clerk of the Legislature Anne Marie Martin. That's AnnMarie, Anne Marie dot Martin, MARTIN, @ SullivanNY.gov. by the end of March, and we would look forward to hearing you. If you have any questions about it, call her or talk to your local legislator, because they can tell you what they're looking for as well.
I think I mentioned this before to you, but I get excited when we talk about paint recycling. because I have these paint cans still. But look at this. Now I have no excuse. Paint recycling expanding to all local transfer stations?
Yeah, this is really great.
Is it so? Is it true?
It already has happened. What? I should say it has expanded. I guess over the last 2 weeks, all the transfer stations, all six of them in Sullivan County that are run by the county, have gotten the necessary bins and other equipment to collect the paint.
It's not just on one day at one place. You can go at any time.
Right. Up till now, it was, I think, in the fall we debuted it. Okay. You could only go to Monticello.
Right.
But now you actually can go during their normal hours, not just to Monticello, but our Ferndale Transfer Station, our Highland Transfer Station in Eldred, our Mammocating Station in Wurtsboro, our Rockland Station in Livingston Manor, or our Western Sullivan Transfer Station over in Coshecton. And we will take that paint off your hands at no charge. You won't even have to give us a coupon or anything. We will recycle it. We're going to use it responsibly with a company called Paint Care that is contracted by the state to take care of this paint, recycle it in an environmentally friendly and sustainable way.
Do you have to do anything to the can, like put kitty litter in it or any of those kinds of things? You can just bring the can.
You just need to make sure that the can still has some sort of labeling on it.
Okay.
You know, it can't just be something where the label got stripped off with it. There's more information on our website about it. Also on who to call and how to get a pickup. If you have more than 100 gallons of paint, we will come and pick it up from you. You won't even have to bring it in.
I don't think I have that much, but
you never know.
I know this has been going on now, you say, for a couple of weeks, but I'm going to consider this your Valentine's Day gift to me.
You're welcome.
I want to remind folks that the county is closed Monday for President's Day.
Yes.
You were also closed for Lincoln's birthday. You
celebrate, right.
The county celebrates that oddly, I think, yep. But that's just me.
Yeah, well, it was something that was negotiated in labor contracts.
Labor contract,
so
yeah.
That's how that worked out. But President's Day is, of course, the official holiday that I think a lot of places are closed for
Monday.
We will as well, but we will reopen as normal on Tuesday.
All right. Happy Valentine's Day, Dan. Who's
to you as well. I hope our husbands are okay with us saying that to one another.
I think so. He's still asleep. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn more about a very anticipated event coming up Monday. It's not only President's Day, but locally it's known as Wayne County Ag Day. Highly anticipated event for the local agricultural community. We'll find out more after a break. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Traditional music magazines have been disappearing fast, but one that's bucking the trend is Songlines, the magazine for international roots music. On the next Waggaload of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we take a look at Songlines magazine and the music it champions. So join me, please, on Sunday afternoon at 3.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Well, the 2025 Wayne County Ag Day is Monday from 10 to 3 at Honesdale High School. This highly anticipated event brings together the agricultural communities of Wayne County and the surrounding areas to explore the latest innovations, technologies, and products in the agricultural sector. Chelsea Hill is the livestock and 4-H animal science educator for Penn State Extension Wayne County, and she joins us now with more. Chelsea, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. I was joking a little bit with our previous guest, Dan Hoos, that today is Valentine's Day, but a more highly anticipated event is actually Wayne County Ag Day on Monday. Tell us a little bit about the new features that some attendees can look forward to this year.
So I'm really excited because we actually have a volunteer in the Master Preservation Program now. That's Marianne Curtis, and she's going to be offering a live demonstration of home preservation and water bath canning at 10 a.m. in our cafeteria. And then we also have two other educational sessions going on that day. So the first one in the morning in the auditorium is giving newborn beef calves a prosperous start, and that's going to be taught by one of my co-livestock educators, Taylor Zahn. She's from York County, so she's traveling up for that. And then our second presentation after lunch is to discuss large-scale solar in Pennsylvania. And this is actually going to be a hybrid format because I'm bringing in experts from across the state. So the entire energy team will be on a Zoom format in the auditorium. So they'll give their presentation, and then we'll do a Q&A session. And the greatest benefit of this is that, like I said, I'm bringing in experts, a whole team from across the entire state to answer any and all questions that anyone in the ag community has about having solar development in the area. So we're really excited about these two separate events and as well as Marianne doing her demonstration. And, of course, we have our lunch that's going to be catered by the Red Schoolhouse. That's always a favorite. They do a phenomenal job for us. And we have approximately 32, I believe, as of this morning, exhibitors that will be in our gymnasium for folks to visit with and learn about some of the new products coming out, as well as services being offered in the area for ag producers.
You've got a couple of other folks coming in, experts Zachary Curtis and Joseph Conklin, discussing topics like soil management and large-scale solar energy. How important is it to have those experts like that talking on these particular issues?
Oh, super important. So we bring in experts from Extension and even outside of Extension to provide knowledge and the most up-to-date scientific-based information for our producers here. You know, you're getting somebody who is very knowledgeable and quote unquote the expert in their field. So the information that they're going to be providing is the most up to date that you can possibly get. And the best part is when they're there in person, you get to have that one-on-one conversation, and get a direct connection to them. So for example, Zach Curtis is actually our agronomy educator. He's here in Wayne County. So this is an opportunity for us to network and for local producers to know who he is, know who I am, know who our 4-H educator and coordinator are, so that they know, you know, if they have a problem in the future that they need addressed, they can come right to our office here in the county, as well as to let them know that we have, I don't even know how many educators we have now, to be honest with you,
well,
across the state. You know, that they can that we can reach out to them for them if we don't have somebody in our local office that has that expertise.
And you get to cater to such a wide range of agricultural interests. How do you ensure that these sessions and these exhibitors cover a variety of topics that are relevant to, you know, both people who are seasoned professionals, newcomers in the ag industry, and then people who may not be involved in the ag industry but want to learn more?
So I have to, you know, give a lot of credit to, you know, folks that sit on my Ag Day committee. They are the ones who are sitting out in the community, Farm Bureau members, those on the conservation district and some other local ag groups. You know, they give me the feedback from year to year as to, you know, what we can do better next year, what speakers we're looking for. And I also, you know, go back to what main questions that I'm getting here in the office. So, you know, we had a lot of questions on calf care for beef producers in the last year or two. So that's why I invited Taylor up. She specifies in beef production. So that's, you know, how we kind of determine who is going to be covering what subjects. And, you know, another example would be our Ask the Expert tables. So they may not be doing an educational session, but they provide the most up-to-date knowledge and information about a certain topic. So for example, I'm going to be having our PDA health inspector, animal inspector, Caitlin Miller. She's going to be talking about HPAI in poultry and dairy, which is a very, very big topic right now, obviously. So she's going to be answering questions that producers as well as anybody from the community may have on, you know, quarantining their animals, making sure that they're doing their best biosecurity practices in order to keep their animals safe and healthy and from not cross-contaminating, not just HPAI, but other diseases as well. And I also have somebody from our dairy team who is also going to be there and one of our ag engineers who's going to be talking about, you know, specifically robotic milking units as well as transitioning older barns into you know, production for livestock or different animals from dairy, say. So we try and fulfill the needs based on what we're hearing from the community, what the producers are looking for. And then, of course, we have our, you know, wonderful exhibitors. They are our stand, you know, every year they come in. They're the businesses that provide services to all of these producers throughout the entire year. And they're going to know exactly what their customers are looking for. And then we have a couple of other small educational individuals for exhibitors as well. For example, our Dairy Princess Court is going to be there to support the dairy industry as well as, you know, obviously looking for volunteers and those who want to get into dairy promotion. And they educate as well as usually provide some sort of goodie. And then we also, you know, have the library here. We have a couple of the local colleges here. Because this is on President's Day, the Wayne Highlands School District does not have school. So that helps our older kids in 4-H and FFA to be involved in this program as well. So they get to talk to, you know, a potential college or university that they may be interested in attending in the future. So we try to make sure that we give as many opportunities as possible to all ages and all areas of the agriculture industry as we can.
Lots to do and see there. There's also a local products bar featuring food samples. Yum. There's an elected official's meet and greet during lunch. But I wanted to before we go, just highlight this, this health screenings that you have. How does Ag Day incorporate the well-being of local farmers and their families into the event?
Oh, so we have the Wayne Community Health Center as well as Wayne Memorial Hospital. Both have tables, and they talk and give different, you know, services to our farm community families. So whether it's health screens, what they offer, or, you know, tick-borne diseases, how to better care for themselves nutritionally, this is an opportunity for them to reach out directly to those producers who usually are stuck on the farm and, you know, maybe they don't have access to a lot of those services that other areas may have. So it's an opportunity for them to reach out to them, make sure that they understand the services that are there. Mental health is another big one that we're trying to push in the ag industry as well, and provide services for them. So, you know, we want to make sure that our producers are going to be here for a very long time, because without producers, we wouldn't have food. And if right. we didn't have food, we'd have quite a big problem.
Yeah, exactly. So, and, you know, we've talked with the Penn State Extension about the mental health and well-being health of farmers and folks in the ag industry and how important that is. So great that you're highlighting that there at Ag Day. Again, Ag Day is coming up Monday, the 17th, from 10 to 3 at Honesdale High School in Pennsylvania, Honesdale, Pennsylvania. It's free, but you want folks to pre-register. Where can they do that?
So they can actually call today until about 4 o'clock. I would recommend you can go online to extension.psu.edu/wayne.county.ag.day. Or call our toll-free number, which is probably the easiest because today is the last day to pre-register. That's 1-877-345-0691. We do accept walk-ins the day of Ag Day. However, I cannot guarantee that we'll have lunch for them. You know, just to make sure that I don't overwhelm my caterer. They need to have numbers ahead of time.
Yeah. They might have to sustain on some of those food samples if they don't get there. Thanks so much, Chelsea Hill.
There'll be plenty.
Chelsea Hill's the livestock and 4-H animal science educator for Penn State Extension, Wayne County. We're talking about Wayne County Ag Day coming up Monday in Honesdale. Chelsea, happy Valentine's Day, but more importantly, happy Ag Day.
Thank you so much. Have a fantastic day.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn more about Tustin Social's free teen club program empowering local youth. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week on Science Friday, we're headed to the North and South Poles to marvel at the ice and the life it sustains. Plus, how grief affects the body.
It is our body's way of telling us, hey, we're taking on a little extra load here as we're trying to understand what's happening in this new world where your loved one isn't with you.
That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today, from 2 to 4 p.m. on Radio Catskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, Nate DeMeo, host of the podcast The Memory Palace. Then, a conversation with Kevin Fagan, a journalist who spent decades covering homelessness. His new book, The Lost and the Found, tells the story of people living on the streets of San Francisco and of Fagan's own time experiencing homelessness. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
This is Ari Shapiro with NPR. If you've been thinking about helping this station with a contribution, but now is not the right time for a financial gift, you can donate a vehicle you don't need. Pickup is free, and it could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Think about it, and thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not, including cars, trucks, boats, RVs, motorcycles, and more. Donate at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Test and Social, the nonprofit organization dedicated to fostering community connections in rural Sullivan County, has announced the launch of its Teen Club program, a free after-school initiative designed to support local youth through creative exploration and skill building. The program, which will run weekly from February 19th through June 18th, offers a range of opportunities for teens to connect, create, and learn. Here to tell us more are Janice Noble, from the Tustin Social Board, and Meg Sullivan of the Blue Fox Motel. Blue Fox has partnered with Tustin Social to offer a culinary arts program. Good morning to you both.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Tim.
Janice, I just want to ask you, what inspired this initiative, and why is it important for the local community to have a teen club program?
Well, Tustin Social is about bridging the gap. And we wanted to bridge that gap in rural youth programming, specifically for teens, and create opportunities for skill development and community connections.
And I mentioned some of the things that Blue Fox is offering: culinary arts. There's any things from creative writing as well. How were some of these offerings chosen for the teen club, Janice?
Well, we have our own brainstorming sessions, and we talk to people in the community to find out what they might be interested in or what might be missing, and we try to fill those in.
Meg, Blue Fox partnering with Tustin Social to offer a culinary arts program led by Chef Bruno Carvalho. How did this come about, and what's exciting to you about that?
Thanks, Tim. We're so excited to be collaborating with Tustin Social again on another initiative, because we've had such great experiences, working with them. This one is sort of the one thing that both organizations believe in is community, and we believe one of the best ways to express community is to do that around food. And so we have the privilege of having Chef Bruno Carvalho on the team, and he has a lot of experience in teaching, loves engaging with kids, and so we have a beautiful test kitchen space for people to work in, and we thought, why not propose something to Tustin Social and see if we couldn't get something going that combines all of those things: the notion of community, the notion of food, the notion of learning, notion of kids. And so, that's where we are.
Chef Bruno brings international expertise to this, and what's great for the kids. What can students expect to learn during the 6-week culinary course with Chef Bruno?
So, Tim, I have Bruno right here next to me. So
hello, Chef.
Good. Yeah.
Yes, Chef. How are you? Good. Tell us what students can expect during your course, and what a great opportunity to have your expertise being shared with them.
So a quick recap of everything that I've done, in terms of teaching. I started in Paris while I was going to culinary school, and what I did was, kind of international. So I bought a globe. I associated myself with a person that had, access to kids that have, limited access to education and needs and everything. And one of them would spin the globe. The other one would stop the globe. And then, for example, if it was Mexico, I'd cook Mexican food. Then as I moved over to Angola in Africa, I specifically cooked Italian food with the kids. So, they learned how to make fresh-made pastas, pizzas, focaccias, anything from sauces, pestos, simple things, And, a few simple desserts as well. And that's kind of what are we looking for here? Same kind of thing.
Janice, what's the role of community partnerships like with the Blue Fox Motel, with Chef Bruno and Meg, in making this program possible?
Sorry, what was that?
I was just asking the importance and the role of community partnerships like you have with Blue Fox and Meg and Chef Bruno in making the Teen Club program possible. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's important because we need to feel like our community is coming together. We need to feel like our community cares about its people. And partnering with established businesses within our community helps to strengthen all of that. So I feel like it's really important for those partnerships to exist.
And this culinary class is part of a broader initiative, of course, to support this youth creativity in the teen club. How do you envision this influencing the local community's view of art and culture and education for teens? And what role do you think local businesses like Blue Fox can play in supporting these community-driven initiatives?
I think just exactly what they're doing, being open to partnering with us and having more programs come up. And we have a few more programs in the weeks after this to come that we'll be partnering with other people within our community. So I think it's great. It's great to feel like we are in this community and we're all in it together.
Meg, as a local business, what do you think? How do you think the Blue Fox Motel is contributing to the cultural and educational development of Sullivan County youth, and why that's so important to you?
What we really want to achieve, I think, is to make everybody feel a whole part of what's happening here, and bring everybody have places and moments where we can all be together and share in both what makes us. What makes us great, and then also think about how we've always thought about the Blue Fox Motel as a place for an environment for people to convene, and so this kind of fits the bill for that. You know, we hope to do that in many different ways, whether it's with the restaurant or with pool parties that we do, or you know, we have a garden in the back that we use so that we grow all of our vegetables and herbs and stuff that come down to the kitchen through spring, through fall. You know, so there's lots of ways, I think, for us to collaborate with everybody that's in the community. And we like to think of ourselves as a place where we can do that, a place for us to convene.
Well, I am far past my teens, but I wish I had something like this when I was growing up. What a great initiative. How can folks get involved? As I mentioned, it starts next week, the 19th, and runs through June 18th. Where can folks register, learn more, get more information?
You can register at hello@tustinsocial.org. And you can also follow us on socials at Tustin Social.
And it's a free after school initiative, so that's amazing.
Yes.
That's being offered
as free.
Well. Yeah.
Yep, it's free to local teens, seventh grade and up, in and around the Narrowsburg area, which also includes our Pennsylvania neighbors.
Yeah.
And busing will be available via Sullivan West, so it's great. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the accessibility for families, especially in rural areas who may not have access to such resources, is just amazing. So kudos to all of you for that. And just before we go, Meg, Janice, Chef, anything you want folks to know about it, or what you hope teens take away from this program?
Sure. I mean, I hope that there's friendships that get created, that there's the skills that Bruno can impart on our teens, confidence. Is there anything else you guys want to add?
Probably fun. You know, I think it's meant to be a joyful moment, you know, where people are learning and experiencing and meeting and collaborating. So it should be a great afternoon experience.
Well, thank you guys so much. We've been talking to Janice Noble, Tustin Social board member, Meg Sullivan of Blue Fox Motel, and Chef Bruno, the chef at
thank
Blue
you.
Fox.
Welcome.
Thank you guys so
Thanks.
Much for what you're doing for the youth in the area, we appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the third annual Roscoe Party Farm Songwriting Contest. We'll find out how you can apply. This is Radio Chatskill.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Tom Papa praised the accomplishments of the new administration.
Grocery prices have gone up already, but don't worry. Despite the high price of eggs, Trump has promised all Americans will still be able to die of bird flu.
I'm Peter Sagal. This week, we're checking out grocery prices in Richmond, Virginia, with special guests Guar, not the gum, the band. Join us for the news quiz that's always metal from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Radio Catskill supporters include Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association, SullivanCatskills.com, Catskill Brewery, brewing ales, lagers, and mixed fermentation beers in a LEED Gold certified building, plus a food truck and beer garden at Exit 96 off Route 17 in Livingston Manor. CatskillBrewery.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And the Party Farm, the boutique recording studio nestled in the scenic Catskill Mountains, is excited to announce that it's accepting submissions for its third annual songwriting contest. It's open to all aspiring musicians, and it's offering a great opportunity for somebody to have their song professionally recorded. Joining us now are Wendy Lamont and Terry Brennan from Roscoe Party Farm. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, hi. Thanks for having us.
Happy Valentine's Day. As Terry said, it's been about a year.
Yeah.
Time for another one. Tell us a little bit about, well, let's talk about this. It's the third annual, but you know, what inspired this again for you guys to do this?
Well, we thought it would be a really great idea, a good way to get to know the arts community in the Catskills, because we're kind of new here. We lived in the city for a long time. We're opening up a recording studio. We figured this would be an awesome way to meet some people that are into recording music and foster community and get our name out there, you know, and it's done pretty well for us, I think, so far.
It's also a nice way to help out artists who may not have access to professional recording equipment, right, but who have a lot of promise, a lot of great ideas. This could be a demo that they can use in the future to, you know, send to other things to get other projects off the ground.
So you've been doing it for a couple of years now. What's been one of the more rewarding parts of this songwriting contest for you guys?
Really, like, what makes me happiest is when an artist comes in with a vision, a solid idea, and we take it somewhere that they never even imagined it could go. Like, when they're impressed, like when people cry because of how I make their music sound, that's what makes me feel the best.
In a good way.
Yeah, in a good way.
Happy tears.
You know, like, oh my God, I never, you know, I've never heard my voice harmonize with my own voice that way, or, you know. Whatever we do, it's you know, it's been a very pleasant experience.
And when it turns into, I want to come back and do more, that's the highest compliment we can receive is,
yeah,
well, I loved how this sounded, I'm going to come do a whole album.
And, oh, wow.
Right.
Very cool. And so what's the process? How do folks, you know, get involved? What are you looking for? And then, you know, talk a little bit about what they get, the recording session itself.
Well, if you want to find all the info about the contest, you can visit our website. We've got all the info, the rules up. Basically, we're looking for people to send us MP3s of their demos. March 2nd is the deadline. After that, we're going to take a week and go through everything, select a winner, and then contact that person. And then up to like 15 hours of recording time goes to the winner. That's basically like a full weekend lock-in. But you know, obviously if you don't have to do it all at once,
RoscoePartyFarm.com.
That's right.
To choose the winner, is there a recording academy that selects this, or am I looking at it?
You're looking at it. We are the academy.
It's a recording academy of two.
Right. But it's, you know, we both have different tastes in music. We both have different experiences. Terry was a professional touring musician for 25 years. I've been a, you know, recording artist, you know, pep band drummer, marching band flute player, chorus singer over the years. So we definitely have different styles, different things that we appreciate. And I think that all kind of comes together in a fun collaboration when we're listening to these songs and picking out different qualities. You know, one thing that we were really excited about, one of our last submissions is someone wrote a bridge in the song. And we were like, oh,
we love bridges.
There was a key change. How exciting. You know, when there's, you know, interest, make it interesting. It's one thing that I would ask is someone who's going to be listening to all these submissions. We want something that grabs and keeps our attention.
So, yeah, you're looking for that. You're looking for that originality, something that's going to grab attention. And, you know, yeah, it's a good song.
Great lyrics, great melodies, you know. A nice hook, all the things.
Well, Terry, as a producer, are you looking for something that can be produced, quote unquote, or are you looking for something that you can elevate to it, a little bit more to show off the songwriting skills and musicality?
I guess it depends, because different songs lend themselves to different kind of styles of production. So really it's whatever serves the song the best.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what we go for. But we can pretty much get as outrageous as you want, you know, with a, you send us a 3-chord song, we can turn it into something amazing.
Right. One of the great things is that Terry and I over the years have built connections with musicians from all over the world and some really top-notch people. So if you come to us and you say, you know, here's my MP3, it's me with a guitar, but I'm envisioning, you know, a violin here or a drum here or a flute here, we can find the people and connect you with them to put them on your track.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I mentioned this, but it's free to enter. It's a free contest.
That's right.
What's the catch?
The catch is that we've been abused by predatory submissions in the past and would never do that to an artist.
Yeah.
But why is it important for you to offer this as a free thing for artists locally and offer such a, I mean, really a valuable prize, a recording session?
Yeah. Well, really, it comes back to the fostering community thing. It's like we really want the Party Farm to become sort of like a musical hub, a place that people think of when they're thinking of getting their art done, making music, being creative. We want people to want to come to us to help them with their projects. For me, I think the most rewarding thing is watching the reputation expand and just, and really as a songwriter, selfishly, I am really into hearing what other people do for their demos. So I'm kind of doing Oppo research.
Well, you also, when you come to our studio and you sort of, a client is really laying themselves out there and you're making themselves vulnerable musically and artistically. And we want them to come there and understand that it's a place to make music and make art and collaborate, and we're not there to take your money.
Well, there's aside from the business aspect of it, there is that emotional kinsmanship connection to the local arts community.
Yeah, I mean, it's a collaborative process.
And there's got to be something that's satisfying that for you. I mean, you're going to see them outside the Party Farm at PEX.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it's and we've grown some really true friendships. I would consider Callison of a great friend.
One of the
now
winners.
She won our first year contest. She's, you know, I know she's very active here, and she's just an incredible talent. And you
Liberation
know,
Station Saturdays at 7. That's her show.
So it's and that's, you know, and then we've connected through her to other artists and other friends. Terry's been working with BJ Hendrickson, who's a local singer-songwriter, big on the local music scene, and he's been just such a joy to work with over the last few months too. So yeah.
such a great rich artistic community here. Such a great
it really
wealth
is
of musicianship.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah. Well, let's remind folks in that community how they can get involved and the deadlines.
All right. So RoscoePartyFarm.com is the website, and there's a little tab up top says songwriting contest. That's where all the rules are. If you go to PEX, you can see our poster on the bulletin board.
We're putting
them up QR code. But all you need to do is record an MP3 of your original song. We're not looking for covers. It must be original. The full rules are up on the website, but email it to RoscoePartyFarm@gmail.com. Get it in by March 2nd, follow the rules on the website, and we'll get in touch.
And watch the magic happen.
And then, you know, we should do this again. We should have the winner back. If we can get our act together, remind me.
Yep, absolutely.
We'll have the winner back. We've been talking to Wendy Lamont and Terry Brennan from Roscoe Party Farm about the 3rd annual songwriting contest. Enter by March 2nd.
11:59 p.m. March 2nd.
And do it. There's a bowling alley at the studio.
That's true. We broke it. But I am learning how to fix it. So.
Thank you guys so much. That'll do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder that you can sign up for our newsletter at our website and get it in your inbox every Friday. If you didn't get it today, sign up. Go to WJFFradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180. Building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org. From The River Reporter, the community newspaper covering 4 counties in Pennsylvania and New York along the Upper Delaware River. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
On the TED Radio Hour, New York Times columnist Charles Blow is calling on Black Americans to move south, a reverse Great Migration, to vote Black politicians into office.
I believe that state power is essential to Black liberation in this country.
New takes on Black history. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast, cloudy, a high 25, winds gusting up to 20 miles an hour tonight, low of 13. But the big news is that a snowstorm, there is a winter weather advisory in effect. Snow showers developing early tomorrow, starting at 11 for that advisory and going through Sunday. We can expect steadier snow developing later in the afternoon tomorrow, accumulating 1 to 3 inches, 3 to 5 inches of snow and ice expected in total. Be careful as you're outside.